here's a story from The World.
China, Russia, and Cuba, three countries you probably do not think of when it comes to exemplary human rights records. But yesterday, these three were admitted to the UN Human Rights Council. Human rights activists have been vocal in opposing this. People like Hillel Neuer. He's the executive director of UN Watch, a Geneva-based NGO which monitors the United Nations. Hillel, what was your reaction to these three countries, China, Russia, and Cuba, getting seats on the UN Human Rights Council?
Well, I thought it was a black day for human rights at the United Nations. This is a body, the Human Rights Council, that was created with the express purpose of holding abusive regimes to account and defending the rights of individuals who suffer oppression and discrimination. And instead, the United Nations appointed some of the most notorious abusers of fundamental freedoms: Russia, which poisons dissidents; China, which silences whistleblowers who are trying to sound the alarm over the coronavirus; and then Cuba, which is a police state that's been existing for six decades, that likewise throws human rights activists in prison and journalists. The notion that these would be the world judges of human rights is absolutely shameful.
So back up for a moment and just help us understand, how does a system actually work at the council? How many members are there and how do they get voted in?
The Human Rights Council is a 47-nation body. Countries serve for three-year terms, and every year there's elections. They're staggered. So every year about 15 countries go off and 15 countries go on. So we had the elections yesterday. And officially, the General Assembly member states are supposed to vote based on human rights considerations. And under the founding charter of the council, council members are obliged to uphold the, quote, highest standards in the promotion and protection of human rights. Yet notwithstanding those criteria, the sad, tragic reality is that countries at the UN typically allow politics to trump human rights principles. And in the end, the reason that China, Russia, Cuba were elected is because countries acted according to political considerations, not according to human rights principles.
Could you argue that by bringing these three countries, China, Russia, and Cuba, into the fold, it'll be kind of like human rights school and will, or potentially could, keep them more accountable?
One could argue that, but not credibly. It's not a credible argument. Sadly, it is a line that we hear at the United Nations by diplomats who are part of the system. I hear this argument. It may be the case for certain countries that have a problematic past and that are on a new journey towards a post-authoritarian system and has really committed to reform. But when Hugo Chavez and then Maduro of Venezuela were elected to the council again and again, did they learn and improve? Or on the contrary, did they throw more journalists, more judges, more opposition leaders in prison than ever before? When Vladimir Putin was elected again and again, as he was yesterday, did Russia learn and improve? Or on the contrary, did they invade more neighboring territories, drop more barrel bombs on Syria, and poison more dissidents than ever before? And the same goes with China.
So Hillel, the U.S. withdrew from the UN Human Rights Council in 2018. It said the council had failed in its mission. The Trump White House has backed away from a lot of UN programs. How significant is the U.S. absence from the council? And along with the admission of Cuba, Russia, and China now, what's it all mean for human rights globally?
Well, look, I think the U.S. and other democracies have a dilemma because the dictatorships are fighting hard to be there, and they are acting vigorously more than ever before to corrupt the ideas of individual human rights. So the U.S. took the approach to pull out. I understood why they did it. I disagreed with that approach. I testified before the Senate, before Congress, and said that actually those who are critics of the council, they should fight and be there and call out injustices.
Can you put just a few more details on that? If the UN Human Rights Council were to work the way you think it should, keeping nations accountable for human rights abuses globally, what does that look like?
Well, it means helping victims on the ground. At the end of the day, words do matter. They do send signals. Word is father to deed. And the Human Rights Council does not have the power of the purse. They don't have the power of the sword, but they do have the power to shame abusers. Let's not exaggerate it. If there's a genocide happening in Syria, the Human Rights Council has adopted many resolutions and they have commissions of inquiry, and that's all good and wonderful. I don't know if it saved a single person. So we shouldn't exaggerate the potential, but it can be one arrow in the quiver. It can be an additional tool in the toolbox. We need accountability. That means resolutions, commissions of inquiry, emergency sessions. We have a few of them today, but far too few. And I hold our democracies accountable. The fact that the European Union didn't say a word publicly that this was a bad thing. So I think there's a lot of fear and cowardice among our own democracies. We need to strengthen them. We need to demand that our democratic representatives use the Human Rights Council for what it should be, which is to speak out, defend, protect victims, dissidents, and hold abusive regimes to account in any way that they can.
Hillel Neuer, he's the executive director of UN Watch, a Geneva-based NGO which monitors the United Nations. Hillel, thank you for the conversation.
Thank you.